And even I've been encouraged by managers in agencies to sell my successes and go off the back of that. When I, we talked about it being a process, I've gone with previous winners from hotels.com and tried to put them on other websites and it just fails. So, it's so subjective. And if you're not going with a structured process and you're trying to go sell answers to problems, then I don't think you're necessarily going down the right track.
Thank you for joining us, Oliver. Why don't we start off with why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself?
Oh yeah, so I go by Ollie typically. I've been working in experimentation forever, like as long as I can remember. That's probably quite accurate actually, based in London. So I've been doing experimentation since probably, gosh, it must be 2009, I would have thought. And before that, I was working in kind of media, so it was a lot of online stuff. It's like paid search basically before that, and that's where I kind of started to work in small parts of experimentation in on the media side of things, and really got hooked into that, and managed to land a job with Expedia, where they were kind of at this pivotal point where they'd done, I think it was three experiments when I joined with hotels.com, and we managed to ramp it up to thousands in a year over the course of a couple of years. And I was lucky enough, to kind of join a team that was really amazing at what they did. And I was pretty scared at the time because I was relatively new to the subject, quite new to analytics. And I really got schooled there in many, many domains, databases, DB2, I think it was at the time. And from there, I've consulted, I think, over 150 different companies via Accenture and various other agencies in London. And had the pleasure of working with some really amazing CRO specialists as well along the way.
Nice. So yeah, Expedia I know is one of those major sites with an amazing experimentation culture. I don't know if they're like booking.com. I know is they really try to encourage everyone to experiment anything that they want.
Definitely, yeah. And I feel like the guys at booking.com were definitely more, at least at the time, they were more audible about what they were doing, and we were a bit more secretive, which now I kind of regret, because we're like that everyone always talks about booking.com as the example, and I'm like, well, which is funny because I think Lucas, one of the main guys at booking.com at the time, a lot of what he says we were doing at the same time, almost in an identical way as well, and his approach was very similar to ours at the time. So yeah,
Nice.
not we weren't copying him. We weren't copying
It's on the record. Well, that's great. I mean, that kind of leads us into what we want to chat about today, is, fostering a culture of experimentation. You obviously have tons of experience kind of spearheading experimentation within companies. So I guess maybe we can start by talking about whether you believe it's best to approach CRO as more of a process, or whether it's better to just have a singular team devoted to it, or a bit of both.
Yeah, good question. Let me answer that in a really roundabout way. So I think the first thing is, the reason why I love experimentation, I think most people, a lot of people do, is that it's so multifaceted and there is no one right answer. And I think we forget that when we read posts or on LinkedIn, or people write about their context a lot. And I'd say, just want to preface this with, there is no one right answer. And when we look at optimization as a specialism, you can go to any one specialist in different companies and you ask them what they do, and they may come back with a very different answer. And that can be because they have a centralized CRO team, maybe they don't have a centralized CRO team, and that CRO sits within analytics, finance, marketing, product. UX and design, it can sit in so many different places, and that can give us very different contexts and different approaches. But I do think that wherever it sits, there's always a centralized process, and that process really involves people in all of those different pockets. And you can draw that process out in many different ways. And I'm sure, again, you've seen lots of different process diagrams of different ex from different experimentation teams. One thing I've noticed recently, and I think some other people like Ton Wessing and a few other people have kind of said the death of CRO, which I think was a mis representation. Myself, I used his death of CRO. It's more of the Crovolution, CRO evolution, in that if you're doing it right, your team needs to change over time. And it goes from a kind of almost a it can go from a centralized team to gaining gravitas and momentum, and then you really, to scale it, need to then push the responsibility of test building out to developers, enable other teams to deliver experiments in a uniform way. So the real answer is both, depending on where you sit on that evolution. If you're quite early, then I think it is a centralized team. If you're quite late on that evolution, I think it's potentially can still be a centralized team. Like I say, there's no one right answer. But I think it steers you more towards having some centralized experts to govern the process and then pushing out the responsibility. And one other thing that I've been thinking about a lot in this area is, especially when you create a centralized pot of a CRO team, and they have designers and an analytics guy and a UXer and a researcher, is what happens to all of those roles and responsibilities in the main part of the team who want to get involved in that? And it can be quite divisive, I guess, by creating that centralized team. So I think I'd steer towards, if you had a choice of setting up a centralized team, do that very carefully, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah. And in this kind of evolution where you're going maybe from more of a centralized team to a culture or a process involving a whole bunch of different people, would size of company maybe have play a huge factor in that, or is it just generally like could be a huge company who is just starting out with this concept of optimization?
Yeah, I definitely, yeah. I think size, the amount of traffic you have, number of product journeys you have. If you're a startup, you might just have one sales journey, whereas in a very mature, large corporate company, you might have several different products. You might also have customer areas of your website or your app that have millions of views every day, which you can also optimize. So you end up then with what can typically happen is lots of CRO teams, which is something that last year and last 5 years I've been working for Sky, and they had at the time, currently trying to centralize it, a couple of different experimentation teams based on which part of the website or the digital estate you're looking at. I'd say also quality of your development teams as well. So one thing I always kind of map as what I think is driving towards maturity is your ability to deliver experiments on server side, and again pushing that responsibility into your development teams as opposed to having client side builds and maybe an agency doing it. I forgot where I was going with that.
Getting, yeah, developers.
Yeah.
Skillful developers.
Sorry. Yeah, the quality of development teams, right, is kind of, you need high quality development teams to be able to do that. And if you don't have that, and you can recognize that you've got them releasing loads of bugs, it takes them, they say that their sprint is every 2 weeks, but they deliver every 3 months because there's lots of issues, then, you know, do you need that centralized team who can actually build experiments for you, who can deliver a lot more quickly? Do you need to outsource that to an agency? You know, I think that is really important as well. Although I'd always watch out, platform stability is always going to be a pain in the ass if you can't, you know, sort that one out. Like you said, traffic volumes and the number of experiments and number of product journeys, I think, are all kind of continuums on that maturity path that you need to consider. And when you make a decision of whether to have an agency, a centralized team, or a distributed team.
This is Roman Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
So how would you go, I guess, maybe briefly, how would you go from being just a large booking website that doesn't do any sort of experimentation to what Expedia does now, which with an entire kind of company-wide, it seems, culture of experimentation?
Good question. Again, so multifaceted. It could be an extremely long answer. start with, again, it really depends on the senior stakeholders that are sponsoring it and their maturity, right? If they're and their mentality, I guess, if they're quite accepting of risk and failure, then you're already in a good position. What I always like to do is at the very start of the process is never start with one experiment. Always plan to start with between 6 to 10 experiments, because as soon as, if you can do that, then you can set the expectation that not everything is going to be a winner, and you can learn from your failures. And I think that's, you know, that almost that green card to fail is really important in experimentation. Otherwise you get into the habit of testing things that you know are going to win. And I think, and again, this is controversial within experimentation, is how much time and effort do you put into research? I think you'll get, again, lots of different answers from different people. I like to not minimize, but do the right research and then move to the experimentation as quickly as possible, because, you know, your research can give you lots of value. It can tell you where your problem areas are. It doesn't always very accurately tell you what those solutions should be. And the quicker you can get to testing those solutions, and again, I always say experimentation is a form of research. I'm diverging from the point again, which I tend to do, but I'd say, getting senior stakeholders to accept that, you know, there's a risk there and losing isn't a big problem. And I always think, you know, it's a news feed, and if you can balance the good news with the bad news, then you're in a good position. And again, getting to volume of experiments is a really good place to start.
Yep. I'm just going to jump in. I've come from an agency, and the biggest obstacle we find communicating results to our, you know, like stakeholders of our clients, and communicating the value of like a loser. So one thing that we've actually adopted is completely changed. I don't think it's an original. I think we're not original in doing this, but changing the mindset from fails or win to more implement versus iterate versus abandon or move on from that idea. I think, can help change that kind of win loss.
I think, in a lot of cases, I've seen agencies sell the fact that they know the answers, right? And even I've been encouraged by managers in agencies to sell my successes and go off the back of that. When I, you know, we talked about it being a process, I've gone with previous winners from hotels.com and tried to put them on other websites and it just fails. So, you know, it's so subjective. And if you're not going with a structured process and you're trying to go sell answers to problems, then I don't think you're necessarily going down the right track.
No, yeah, you really limit yourself when you're like, okay, this test lost, let's try something else. And more, trying to get a culture of thinking of losses as learning, something to learn from.
What I've always struggled with is when to give up on something. Like iteration number 7, should we? And there's maybe a sponsor who's like really wanting to go for it. No, we've committed now.
Yeah. Oh no.
When do you burn it? That's another question, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you have to go. That's when the research is important in your hypothesis and whether you're testing things that aren't a real problem, or if you're iterating, maybe the 8th one, if you're finally solving a problem, will perform well. Yeah,
Have you ever done decision trees where you plan beforehand and you kind of, if it fails, then these are the things we're going to look at, and based on those things, you do X, Y, or Z.
Sorry,
I haven't used them myself, but I think it's a really good framework.
Yeah, we've never used a kind of test-specific decision trees. I think that would be a really interesting thing to try. Just more kind of an umbrella decision tree on when to move on from a test and when to continue to iterate.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So yeah, first step is getting buy-in, making sure that the higher level stakeholders are bought into experimentation. What would step 2 be?
I'd always say, so I've got to mention the background noise, which get the analytics team to do, but like just always make sure your data is accurate,
right?
Which is getting harder and harder to do, and that we'll talk about customer level testing in a bit, but like cookies are all over the place and I don't think everyone's realizing that. With Safari deleting cookies, if your A/B testing platform uses cookies, you're probably allowing customers to move from one variant to another, and I think that's widely ignored at the moment. But yeah, testing the accuracy of your platform, checking it against database orders, those types of things I think are really important, as well as looking for SRM and various other measures to make sure they're accurate. And then I think internal PR is going to get you a long way. If you can learn to communicate results in a really punchy way, and when I say punchy, I mean brief. And I think what I've always said, experimentation is like the gateway drug to data science, in that it really gets people hooked onto it. It's so simple for senior leadership who are not necessarily data savvy. If you make it palatable and like in bite-sized pieces, to get them hooked into experimentation. And once you're showing them results in a single slide, they'll get hooked really quickly, and that's how it will grow and scale really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I can see that snowballing across all sorts of different areas of companies once they see the success in one. Cool. Well, yeah, super interesting. Would you say that there's, going back to team versus process, is there a specific moment that a company should kind of pivot from more of a centralized team to a more general process or experimentation culture?
It's a good question. Good question. Again, there's so many variables in it. I don't think there's one pivoting point, but I think once it feels like there's a bottleneck with the experimentation team, so you're either going to hire like a massive experimentation team, so there isn't, or you need to enable multiple teams to deliver experiments. I'd say the other part is probably, are there people in teams that feel like they want to be in experimentation, but they're not? So I think you can look at that, the experimentation process. So like hypothesize, validate ideas, prioritize design, put in analytics requirements, build the experience, QA, live, analyze. Like none of that requires like a CRO specialist. Though, like if you looked at it afresh, without a CRO specialist there, you'd have volunteers from around the company. And culture is built around people, right? So if you centralize it, you're not growing a culture. You're like siloing it. You're creating a new country, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're keep getting people involved along the process, and again, this is why in a couple of my videos, I'm saying we're becoming a shepherd, no longer a specialist, but we're a shepherd of, we know the process really well. We're trying mm-hmm. to piece that process together and get the right people involved. And if you can do that, then you have a culture. And then your test of culture is, when you leave, does that process still continue? Because if it doesn't, you haven't changed the culture in any way, it will just fall apart and you're still that pivotal piece to it. And that's kind of my test in a way of, have I succeeded in creating experimentation culture? If I leave, does it still continue?
Right. Well, all very interesting. Let's move on to experimentation at a customer level. Obviously, you brought up that Safari's removing cookies. Why don't you explain what exactly you're talking about when you mention experimentation at a customer level, and how is it different? Yeah.
Sure. So there's kind of four scopes to experiments, and we typically only talk about one of them. So there's an impression scope, which is typically used for click-through optimization. So it'll be used on Google search. You can use it in your search results listings on your page, on your results page, to decide what sort order you want to display. You have a session. So do you want to try and convert someone within a session? User or cookie is the one that most people use these days, which is, allows us to assess whether someone converts or comes back and converts over a longer duration, which I do think in most cases is the right choice, unless you want to use multi-arm bandits, which it just doesn't work at a cookie or user level, which I can explain in a second. And then, because of the cookie complications and the things that are changing in the market, and I think COVID to some respect as well, I think people are starting to focus more on customer. And I think we're in as an industry we talk about it's not CRO anymore, it's experimentation. And I think along with that kind of ethos, people are trying to start running experiments that affect across channel. So it might be that you run an experiment to increase conversion online, but also decrease calls in the call center. Now, to do that and do that assessment, you need to assign a real person as opposed to a cookie on a device, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that more and more. And now that I work in insurance, I'm in a great position. In the UK, insurance companies, all of their traffic comes from price comparison websites. And we know who the customer is almost. For most of our customers, you come into the website, we know who you are immediately. So it's perfect for this type of thing. But previous to that, especially over COVID, lots of clients were trying to retain customers when everyone was on furlough, some people getting laid off. And we did
Furlough is like the government sponsored money, exactly. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Free money. We're paying for it now, believe it or not. Yes. I think everyone is. So people were kind of making cutbacks, people were being laid off, and companies were trying to retain customers. And a couple of years ago, again, for a big telco, we were trying to retain their customers, but also allowing them to downgrade their products so that we would retain them in the long run. We'd also allow them to download online to reduce the call center volume of people trying to downgrade, because previously they'd always tried to force you down the call center to make it a little bit more hard, difficult to downgrade. Yeah. Black hat, or the dark UX, I guess. But yeah, basically real customer level experimentation, I really believe, is the future, down to cookies and down to experimentation growing legs and growing into the customer area, and not just being like this CRO driven tactic, I guess.
So in terms of using customer data for that, do you foresee any specific ethical considerations? Everybody's really concerned. Obviously in Europe, there's GDPR.
Yeah.
How would we navigate and keep a strong, you know, landscape of experimentation?
I think you have to have opt-in. Anyway, in Europe, you have to have opt-in for cookies, and there is an argument of whether you have to be opted in for experimentation or not. And that is very unclear, to be honest, when you read the documentation, GDPR documentation and PECR documentation. It's pretty unclear as to whether you really need it. You can make arguments to say, it's part of how we monitor our product. And you can then legitimize it, but it's kind of questionable. So it's been an issue for a while, just even with cookies. I think now it's going to be very similar to marketing contact preferences, in that you should probably gather consent. You should probably gather consent. It's going to be more tricky. I mean, in a way, there's kind of three methods to actually identifying someone, right? So you can get them to log in. You can use a customer data platform, which is, at some point you're going to have to have logged in, but it can still then recognize your, or map your cookies that do exist, or any other identifiers from third parties, and plug that into your experimentation platform. And then you can use a mixture of pre-assignment. So that's taking your whole customer database, splitting it into segments, and then feeding that into your current experimentation tool. So your experimentation tool can target a massive list of customer IDs. And you can use Optimizely or any other A/B testing tool to do that. And one other thing is, as well as the Optimizely full stack, I don't work for Optimizely, by the way, but other experimentation tools are available. Optimizely allows you to use a third party ID as its primary ID. And I think there's probably other tools out there that allow you to do that, but you could use your customer ID as that primary ID. And then when you're assigned, then Optimizely can use that customer ID to allocate you across different devices as well, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, it kind of, I guess, along with the evolution of CRO or Crowvolution, it's more less around the website focused experimentation and more full stack. It seems like we're going to have to pivot that way.
Definitely, yeah. I think, you know, stuff like pricing experiments always been a bit of a gray area, but if you could control them across multiple platforms, that's something you could open up, which could be really cool.
Earlier you mentioned the use of multi-arm bandit tests you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan because it's not really possible when you assign at a user level, right? So a multi-arm bandit, the analogy is that you have lots of slot machines. The challenge, the difference between that and a user, a customer, a real person, is that as a customer goes through a sales journey, they become more and more likely to buy in most cases, right? So if you look at a visit curve or a session curve and say how, on average, how many sessions do our customer base have before they buy? It might peak at one or two, depending on your scenario. It might peak at seven, depending on your product. A multi-arm bandit, the probability of it paying out each time is normally the same. Whereas a customer, it increases over time. And you get this thing called return user bias, which is exactly the reason why you can't change splits over time against the user. Mm-hmm. If you go from 50-50 to 90-10, then the proportion the next day of returning customers will be different to new customers, and your 10 split will almost always have a better conversion rate. And that's because you're adding less new customers, but your returning visitors are the same, right? And right. The more you change it, the more it's going to break. So that's why it's always a big no-no. But then you have these experimentation platforms, not going to name any in this instance, who say we can auto-optimize, but they're also saying that they're assigning users at a user level. You can't do that without biasing your experiment. So therefore, you need to operate multi-arm bandits at an impression level. And they're great for doing that. Google would do that at an impression level. Really, what you then need to be doing is only assigning visitors once. You assess whether the multi-arm bandit paid out or not. And then the next visit, they're not in it anymore. They're not in the experiment. Because if they convert the second time, you don't know whether that's because they played a different machine. Mm-hmm. Or because they're a returning customer and they've got a higher conversion rate because they're further down the decision journey. So I think there's a lot of platforms out there haven't thought it through properly, if I'm honest, in that respect.
Yeah, especially with the switchover with GA4 to user level or user scope data.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're paying more attention to that.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think many people have thought about that return user bias properly from those platforms. I think sometimes the platforms like here's an amazing service, but they haven't used the product as much as I guess consultancies in some cases.
Right. Cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up everything I wanted to chat with you about today. That was a great discussion. I love the analogy of testing or A/B testing as a gateway drug for within a company.
I never know if people are going to take that in the wrong way, but yeah, I like that one.
Well, yeah, hopefully they'll take it in a positive way.
Get them hooked.
Was there, before we go, is there anything going on in your life that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Good question.
That you want us all to come to?
You know what? Probably we had our summer party last Thursday, and I'm probably still recovering, so that's why I'm a little bit slow in response to the question. No, I mean, I'm just working so hard at the moment on pet projects on the side, started a bit of an e-commerce business on the side, which is doing pretty well. You know, you start something just thinking, I'm going to set up a website to experiment with analytics, to like set up GA4 before my company does, so I know what I'm doing, all of that. And inspired by a load of kids on TikTok importing stuff. And I'm actually kind of starting to make a bit of money out of it by accident, which is kind of cool. So if anyone needs any RC cars in the UK, go to www.radio-control.co.uk and you can get them there. So it's kind of, yeah, it looks terrible. I'm not proud of it, but it's working. So yeah,
it's kind of good fun. That's awesome. I'll definitely check that out.
A niche. Everyone's got to have a niche.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, thanks so much. How can people reach you?
On LinkedIn, always there. Oliver Payton one, I think. I'm also the Oliver Payton, but I lost the account. So yeah, Oliver Payton one. If I think that's right, we'll put the link somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, we will. Or radiocontrol.com.
Radio-control.com. Yeah, contact. I'll have, it'll be a robot that will probably reply, but you know, I'll get to you eventually.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. It was super interesting to chat with you. Yeah, I hope you have a good rest of your week.
You too. Nice to meet you.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye.